Welcome to Royal Legacy, where we will explore the rich athletic history and deep family connections of BYU sports. Join us as we honor the past, celebrate the present, and look forward to the future of the BYU Cougars. Here's your host, Lauren McLean.
How's it going, everyone? I'm Lauren McLean, and welcome to Royal Legacy, where we dive deep into the family connections of BYU sports. This week, we're revisiting a past episode of another BYU sports podcast, Legends of 84, a deep dive into the 1984 championship season. Thanks for listening, and Royal Legacy will be back soon with a new episode.
This is Legends of 84, the story of BYU's remarkable national championship football team, told by the men who changed the world of college football and were forever transformed by that unforgettable season.
We knew we were going to be good. How good? Nobody knows.
I just never thought we'd lose. And each game that we won, we got more and more confident.
But once we played next to each other, we protected one another.
If you're not willing to prepare, then you're not going to be ready to win.
We are a peculiar people. We need to embrace that.
Brigham Young University has won the Holiday Bowl 24-17, and the Cougars are the only undefeated team in the nation. And I think they'll be number one.
Brigham Young way out in front in the third quarter. And they got him. Kirk Gavea and Ty Mattingly. We've spent a lot of time in this game talking about BYU athletes, but if you're wondering who might play defensive end next year with Jim Herman leaving, there's a young man, Ty Mattingly, 248 sophomore from Tucson. He's a pretty good football player.
He is a pretty good football player.
I wasn't one that fell in love with football early on. I was actually a motocross racer. This is Ty Mattingly, defensive line. Spent my youth racing, not going to church and doing all of the things that I should because I was out at the racetracks. But then when I was a junior, I had probably our best athlete in our high school down in Tucson, Arizona, talked me into going out for track and throwing the discus. So I did that and then met the football coach who bugged me and forced me to come out and play football. So I only picked it up and played in high school for my junior and senior year. I found out that I was pretty good at it. So when BYU came a-calling and there was an opportunity to have somebody pay for my schooling to come play football, I jumped all over that and came up from Tucson, Arizona in 1980 to play football. 1980, of course, is the Miracle Bowl year, one of the greatest seasons BYU's ever had and one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in college, which was Jim McMahon. So the interesting thing about that class of 80 is there were about 20 of us that came in as freshmen together. If you go back and look at that group of 20 people, three were first round NFL draft picks. That is crazy good. That's Alabama good, or better than Alabama good. It was a unique situation that we had in 1980 with that group coming in. There was 4 or 5 years building up to that 1980 class, where the mindset and everything at BYU was changing because of success and the success that Jim McMahon brought and his winning attitude that he brought to the field. So the only way I can describe 1980 was magic. And I know we call it the Miracle Bowl of that year. And BYU has actually been pretty miraculous in my life, spiritually, as well as in the lives of so many of those players that I played with. These guys would show up and they were just crazy knuckleheads, just like I was. And just the magic of BYU, when you give into it, it can transform you. And I've seen that with so many of those guys that I played with. You talk about Glenn Kozlowski, Lewis Wong, and many others. Once you give into to BYU, and that's where I hate this one and done kind of a notion that we have in today's sports. You just don't have that 4 years for that magic and for that spirit that exists on campus to permeate through you and transform your soul. And we did have it back then. That class of 1980 was incredible, and it was the backbone of what formed a lot of the 1984 national championship team.
Trumper chased out of the pocket. Mattingly really went after him, and now he dives down the sidelines, tries to pick up the first down, but he stepped out of bounds at the 36-yard line.
My dad was a dropout of high school in the 11th grade and went and enlisted in the military and went off to the Korean War. So it was part of that kind of crazy greatest generation type of people. And he always wanted me to go to BYU. And so when that opportunity surfaced, I jumped all over it. But Had I not gotten a football scholarship, I probably would have tried to find a way to come up to BYU just because I felt like there was something there pulling me just because of my father and his desires for me to go there. The university transformed my life. I was never a bad kid, but church wasn't necessarily the first priority on my list on Sunday morning. It was getting to the motocross track and trying to win some little trophies. The thing that's interesting about BYU is they force you to take religion classes there, which is a good thing. You just got that daily nourishment and watering and fertilizer that you need in order for those things, those seeds to grow and take off. I was a 17-year-old freshman, so it took me 2 years before I turned 19 and was even eligible to go on a mission. So in that 2 years of religion classes, and I actually felt this desire to serve a mission and to go out and immerse myself further into religion. So I went on this mission and it was fantastic. It transformed my life. Nothing seemed hard after 2 years of knocking doors for 70 hours a week because we were a heavy proselyting mission out there in Virginia, West Virginia, North Carolina.
Ty Mattingly, another stop for BYU.
It wasn't unusual for us to score 60, 70 points a game against some of those whack opponents back then that weren't as strong. But we could light up and score at will. What started to happen from that 80 on is that the defense became a big focal point. And if you look at the 84 season, you'll find that BYU's defense actually won a lot of those games for the Cougs and kept the Cougs in the game when we were struggling to score.
Our defensive line led by Jim Herman, these guys were tenacious. This is Robbie Bosco, quarterback. And I guess what probably made me a better player was having to go against them in practice. We scrimmaged a lot and they didn't let up. So it was actually for me harder to go against our defense than it was to play in the football games. And our defense was a top 10 defense in the country.
And so it became a much more balanced offense, defense, special teams approach through that year. Off the field, we hung out. We'd go out to dinners. We'd go to training table together. We'd go hit the Star Palace, which was the dance place back at that time. A lot of those guys, we still hang out. We still go to lunch once or twice a month. It's a real fraternity that has survived a 44-year test of time. I think a lot of universities don't necessarily have that. One of the past great quarterbacks from the University of Utah said, "I'm really jealous of what you guys have down there at BYU." He could sense that there was this extra brotherhood that binded us together that he didn't feel in the locker room up at the U and with his past teammates. And I think that's part of that magic of BYU that I really wish everybody could experience.
Well, they try to go for the first down on third down, giving to Rose, but he didn't make it. And Ty Mattingly. Mattingly, a sophomore, a KO, a sophomore.
A lot of universities, the coach will offer a prayer or call on somebody to give a prayer, and that's great. So I'm not trying to belittle that at all. But one of the unique things that started with us that year was Big Louis Wong from Kaneohe, Hawaii. Right after when we were ready to go out on the field, he would always scream out in his pidgin English, "Let's come together." And we'd all gather up in a big tight ball in the center, just interlocked with each other. And Louis would always offer his pidgin prayer. And that was a unique thing because it was player driven and player sponsored versus the coach forcing somebody to have a prayer. And so that was an interesting thing that happened in that 84 year that I don't know that I remember happening a lot prior to that. But Louis Wong was fantastic in his little pidgin voice, pulling us all together, creating that unity. And even today, he's one of those guys that is a hub that keeps a lot of us together, usually through golf outings or food, but he's helped maintain that fraternity that we had 40 years ago, even to today.
And as far as the brotherhood though, there's a few of us, we play golf every, we're gonna play golf tomorrow. This is Louis Wong. Trying to keep that together has been something that we're constantly trying to do. Like, how do we pull this more together?
This, the quarterback is Thunell, number 16. It's off the left side this time. Good hard hit, very little gain.
You know, one thing about the BYU defense, there's not a lot of concern as to if they're going to come out and be ready to play. I don't care what situation it is or what's going on with the coaches.
That brotherhood, you don't want to let anyone else down. And not just your position group, could be the linebackers that are behind you. If you miss an opportunity to get in a hole and stop the run and you let the guy have 5 yard head start running at the linebackers, I mean, that can really blow up those linebackers and blow their shoulders out or their necks or whatever. So you end up not wanting to let your teammates down. I wish people had more time at BYU. That 4 years is a great opportunity for that spirit to get interwoven through everybody's fabric of their life, whether they're a member of the church or not. I've seen so many guys show up at BYU, either inactive or non-members, and totally transform their lives. Sometimes it takes a little while, right? We've got some of our knuckleheads that get kicked out for a while. Then they realize that, hey, I'm missing something in my life. And then they come back to BYU and they experience it. Guys like Glenn Kozlowski, that, and I'm not reaching any confidences here, he'll share that story with you. Glenn Kozlowski experienced the magic of BYU, got booted, did what it took in order to come back, and had a great career. And he's created a great life for himself and his family because of BYU. When you have an example set by a leader like a Jim McMahon, it makes a lasting, lifelong impact on you with this notion of never giving up, not quitting. That's part of the miracle and the beauty of sports and the fascination with sports is people love the comeback. They love the underdog and they love to see those last second Hail Marys. And we lived one of the greatest ones in college football history. The spirit and this magic of BYU and this fabric continues to weave through your life. There's nothing like the legacy of being a member of the 1984 BYU football team. But when you think about the lasting legacy that I think you want from BYU, I think it's going to come down to my 5 kids, and I hope at that time maybe 25 grandchildren. If all of those people can still have their lives centered in the gospel, and good people that contribute to society and love their neighbors, then I think that would be what I would define as success.
Bosco again. Bosco back up the middle. He has got Hayes for the speedster over the 40 to the 44. Close to another first down for Brigham Young.
I grew up in San Mateo. I'm the youngest of 9 children, 7 boys, 2 girls. This is Adam Haysbert, wide receiver. My family originated in Louisiana and moved to California, but I have fond memories of playing football on the street with my brothers. We weren't playing video games. We were out there mimicking what we saw on TV. I'd be running in the cars and everything, catching the ball as a little kid. A lot of them will tell me stories. I had a really good capacity to catch the ball even when I was very young. My mother was very spiritual, and she did raise us with a certain level of knowledge and exposure to Christ and to the Bible. I remember watching TV one day, and I saw this college team, blue and white, throwing the ball all around the yard. Exciting looking football. Didn't realize I'd end up going to that school because it was BYU. Don't even know how I ended up watching the game, but it was just this random thing. And so that's just one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is me being a running back in high school that had a decent amount of speed that was 4 or 5 on the grass wasn't bad back in those days. And I can also catch. And so I think that's what drew the attention of Doug Scoville, one of the coaches for BYU at that time. One of the main reasons I was recruited was because of my ability to catch. Doug Scoville came and talked to my parents. It seemed a very smooth and seamless kind of situation until years later when my mother told me, she says, when that coach came to recruit you to BYU, he says, you almost didn't go. You know, your father almost refused to let you go. I was like, what? I said, that would have been devastating. She never told me that. This is like 20, 30 years later. She tells me this. She says, yeah, she says, your dad wasn't sure you could handle being away from home. I'm like, that's crazy. But I'm thankful that obviously he yielded. I'm pretty sure my mother had a lot to do with that.
First and goal, Brigham Young on the 7-yard line. Bosco to throw, the rush is on. Throws for the end zone, has a man, Petey. Adam Haysbert caught it. Looked like they were trying to blitz, but Adam was open over in the corner and Robbie picked him up.
I remember there was an announcement made that I would receive a scholarship to BYU. I ended up going to a class. Someone walked in the class and said, oh, did you hear where Adam Haysbert's going? He's going to BYU. They don't even like black people there or something. They were just saying some stuff, just some wild stuff. I was like, what's that all about? I was hearing a lot of different negative things because people put negative spins on everything. There were just certain belief systems about Mormons. None of that, which really I believed, I just heard it. So when I finally showed up at the school, I was just in awe of the beauty, mountains, everything, taking that in. I knew that it was going to be an adjustment, but it wasn't too big of an adjustment. It was definitely different. These are just things that I mostly kept to myself. But you could be on campus and you're like the only chocolate guy there. I know when I first got there, I was a little self-conscious because it just appeared as if everywhere I walked, people were looking at you. It didn't really bother me, but it made me feel I had to adjust a little bit. I just wanted to absorb and understand the culture that I was coming into.
The story on Adam Haysbert. He's the deep threat, but this time with the delay, he drags across the middle.
Coach Edwards, he seemed to be very in tune with the spiritual side of me, which when I look back on, I'm just like, how did he know? He must have had a really good discernment. I remember him giving me a choice. He says, hey, would you rather play a wide receiver or defensive back? I'm like, where you guys throw the ball? And I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like, I want to be a receiver. That seemed like the glory position at Sun. I was like, I want to be a receiver. I still remember at different times in my years there, I hear him make a comment or someone make a comment, and he would make a comment about me. He says, yeah, that's because he's living right. He would say things like that. And it's like, oh. I'm wondering, like, what does he see? But he saw something in me.
Third down and three for BYU. We have Haysbert at the bottom of your screen as Bosco on a third down play. He's got a man open over the middle. He's got him. Caught. Clay Haysbert making the catch for a first down. Here's the replay.
I still remember early on in practices because you got athletes coming from all over the country. Everybody's like a superstar where they came from. And sometimes I had to get into my head like, no, dude, you have to start over. They don't know how good you are. And it took a while for me to catch on because I would just kind of conduct myself in practice the way I used to conduct myself in practice in high school. I already knew I was going to get the position. I already knew I was good. And so I felt like I didn't really have to show everything in practice. I said, I'll show you in the game. Well, that doesn't work in college. You got to show your work and your swag in practice. I remember Norm Chow yelling several times, how can I justify you? Because I was just doing lackadaisical things. It was just the way I was thinking, the lack of talent. Eventually, I started straightening that out because you grow up. I was just a young kid. That was the beginning of the journey, watching all of these other athletes that really excited me and impressed me. I came in with Jim McMahon. That was a very exciting time.
3 seconds left, third and 10 at the SMU 41-yard line. McMahon all the way back in his own 46, throwing for the end zone. Receivers are there, defenders are there.
Glenn was kind of wild, but he was a good, good guy. I was pretty close to Glenn early on there. We were always good friends and a good teammate. He really got going quickly because he started playing before I did. Very close in our speed and everything like that. I used to be Vlad Sikahima's roommate. I was very close to Ty Mattingly too because I spent a lot of time with him. I used to go to his parents' house with him. I have to say there's something special about us because prior to that year, we experienced Gordon Hudson, Steve Young era. We were a great team. Those guys, we had a very strong offense and we were very productive and winning games and set us off very well with a good, particularly good winning streak and expectation. I seen it earlier in our senior year. It was a bit of a rebuild year. Some of us were unknowns coming up. I was coming up because I didn't really play that much that prior year in 83. And Robbie was similarly unknown to a certain degree compared to Steve Young. And so we started off with the first game on television, Pittsburgh, and there's a lot of expectations, but we were excited. And I'd say the biggest difference between the two teams or the teams prior, at least in my opinion, is that 1984 team, we were really a family. We really loved each other. We were very close. There's no division, for lack of a better word. There's no kind of jealousy, envy. There's nothing like that. We really worked together. No dissension. We didn't have any of that. We were just unified. It was just like one unit. We just fought together. We're family. To this day, when we see each other, we're so excited to see each other. It doesn't matter how many years we're apart.
Some of my best friends, Adam Haysbert, we were roommates, so we hung out together all the time. This is Leon White, linebacker. I think one of the keys to our success is we hung out after football. We became friends off the football field.
That Pittsburgh game really solidified us because that was a very intimidating and very challenging time. When we first got to the stadium, they were cussing at us way up. That's a big stadium up on top of walls. The news people were putting us down like we were just a high school team. People really just didn't have much expectation. Well, they found out. That night before that game, we came together. We had a small pep talk. I remember that was the first time I spoke before the team like that because I had gotten pumped up because I caught my brother Lanier. Because he was a very good football player in his day. He just knew what the moment was about. So he just lit me up. And so by the time I got off that phone and we have our little cheeseburger night and we go watching NFL games and the coaches give us our goals for the next day. And then the coaches leave and then the players were just among each other. I remember I said something like five words and I didn't realize the impact of those words. But I was so hyped. I think I remember Glenn Kozlowski laughing and he grabbed me because I was kind of a shy guy. I never really spoke up, but I spoke up that day.
Second and 11. The ball on the 11-yard line. Bosco, Brigham Young quarterback. Possibly audibilizing right now. Throws for the end zone. Touchdown, Brigham Young, Haysbert.
Everybody had gifts and talents. Glenn was talented and good. Mark Bellini was good. David Mills was good. Robbie was good. Lake Hamili, Robert Parker, Vi Sikahima. We had guys that had talent. Everybody had something to give, had something to offer. Everybody had a loaded pistol, so to speak. They had game. It's like, that's the old saying, they got game. We had game. Everybody had game. Kelly Smith had game. Anytime you play Utah, that's always a memorable game. The other Negro black guys used to talk to us, call us out of our names and tease us a little bit. Like, you shouldn't be going to that school. But we ignored that, just used that for fuel. I would hear comments like when we did play Utah, one guy just had to just mouth off a little bit. I was just basically doing my job and I knew the ball wasn't coming to me because it was a running play. But I ran it. I just ran him down. I was just running him out of the play. He looked at me and says, you ain't that fast. You ain't got no speed. I was like, dude, I didn't even shift gears on you. I just took you out of the play. But, you know, I'm just looking at him. I didn't really have much to say. My whole deal was I do my talking on the field. If you do a cheap shot, that's going to cost you a touchdown. That's just going to cost you a catch. I'm just going to make a first down. So you're going to be in pain after that because we're going to go down the score. That's always a memorable game because of just the hype that's built up over it.
Adam Haysbert caught it.
Every game, in my opinion, was a new chapter. It was like a unique story, playing in Mexico in the rain, playing Utah State when it was snowing hard. It's because everything was an adjustment. We had to find a way to win. Hawaii was memorable. Number one, because we were in Hawaii. That was a very scary game to a certain degree, but watching our guys make some incredible plays, Kyle Morrell and his famous leap over the line and things like that, and watching Kelly Smith and Glenn Kozlowski come through and Bellini and our defense coming through the way they did, that was a strong team victory. And that was the epitome of our heart. During that year, there were some genuine just wins that we got that just came out of our heart because we believed. There's no doubt. It wasn't an audible thing. It was just part of us. It's hard to put a finger on that as to why during that time. In hindsight, we were just motivated. We didn't have a lot of distractions. And I think that's big.
Third and 11. Bosco looking downfield, throwing, got a man open at the 40-yard line, and out of bounds across the way is Haysbert. And that, my friend, is the way Brigham Young has been getting its first downs all year. Sometimes they're the most dangerous.
I tell you what, those guys have no idea how much I pray for them. I don't know that I've ever really told them. I don't think I mentioned it to Leon. I don't think I mentioned it to David Mills. I don't think I mentioned it to Glenn Kozlowski. I don't think I mentioned it to Ty Madden. I don't think I mentioned it to Mark Bellini. But they're always on my mind. My legacy I want to leave is really to be a man of faith, a man that's after God's heart, and to be a light, be that burning light. My biggest thing now is very much my mother would be so happy. That was one of the things she used to echo when I was in the home with her, because I moved back from the East Coast to the West Coast to be with her before she died. and I got 10 more years with her. So she died in 97. One thing I knew that she enjoyed about me and that she really loved about me, she loved the fact that I was pursuing God. I want to see my family saved. I mean, there are many that have received Christ. I just want everybody to, because I know what the consequences are. But I want the same thing for my teammates.
Coming up next episode.
I met Lavelle on a blind date at Utah State University, and he was a big man on campus. And he didn't know until we were on our honeymoon that I had never seen him play in a football game. And for the first 5 years of our marriage, I really hoped that football would go away, but it didn't. And it was after that fifth year that I realized, hey, I better change my attitude toward it.
Thank you for listening to Legends of 84. This podcast series was produced by Eric Michael Robertson and Scott Christofferson, with Bree Ray Alpew as associate producer. Music by Stuart Maxfield and Eric Michael Robertson. Legends of 84 is a production of BYU Radio.